This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's my pleasure to welcome you here to the Clark Howard Show, where our mission is to serve you with advice and information that empowers you to make better financial decisions in your life. One way we're available to serve you is through our Team Clark Consumer Action Center. Team Clark Consumer Action Center has been with us since 1993, providing one-on-one free advice and guidance. To learn how you can receive this, go to clark.com/CAC. In this episode, it seems like every time you're in a store and you're at the register, you're being asked to round up for this charity, that charity, or the other charity. And how do you decide if you're going to do that, when you're going to give, or if they ask you, would you like to give a dollar to this, that, or the other? How do you make that decision? Also, I recently answered a question from someone about a facility fee being added to a doctor's appointment. This is actually a trend, and let me tell you, it's not your friend. So I was on a charity board for years that one of the board members was the CEO of a big retail company. Being the CEO, he said, okay, we're going to do roundup at the register for the charity. And we were all sitting around there and said, that sounds very nice. Thank you. And then the millions poured in. I mean, man, it was amazing. It actually moved the needle of donations for this charity that I was on the board of. You see this at retailers, supermarkets, a variety of stores. When you're at the keypad and you're paying your bill, it'll say, would you like to round up? You'll see many times at fast food restaurants, they'll ask you if you want to round up to the next dollar for the money to go to this, that, or the other. And I had a question recently from somebody saying, what's going on? Are they just pocketing that money? The owner's just taking that money? And there may be at some point some ugly scandal where the money is not paid to a charity, but as a general rule, the money is paid to whatever organization it is that they're collecting that money for. The company that does it, they're able to pound their chest and they get awards and all that for the money that they turn over. And they seem like big heroes, the charity, and they are, but even they're not putting their own money behind it. It's your money funding that award that company's getting, but who cares? Because if you believe in the cause, the purpose, you believe in the organization, that's fine. On the other hand, if they're saying the money's going to blah, 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 and you don't know anything about that organization, you don't know if they handle that money efficiently, you don't know if they spend it well, you don't know if they're good at their mission, then I'd say you worked hard for your money, then just don't round up or don't give an additional dollar or whatever. That you need to feel comfortable with who is asking for that money and what's actually going to happen with it. But it's kind of like the curse of the iPad, where no matter where you go now, they're popping it around and you're being asked to give a tip at places that didn't used to have tips. It's the same thing at retailers and grocery stores where they're all asking you if you want to do the roundup or do an additional contribution. You got to feel comfortable with it and you got to be able to afford it before you do it. But they are legit.
Sarah on our team posted the funniest photo. Did you see it from the recent solar eclipse? You know how people were posting their photos of the eclipse? It was a photo of the eclipse and then a close-up supposedly, and it showed, do you want to tip 20%, 25%, like on the moon,
on the sun, dark.
Oh my gosh. And I recently, my parents, like with charities, it is really hard. I was going through their statements and noticed a monthly charge of like $65 to a charity. And I went to Charity Navigator and looked it up, and it actually was legitimate, but like, it's just, you're always trying to figure out.
And if you're a longtime listener, you know that my late mom, as her mental capabilities slipped, was being scammed by all these fake charities. And we had a lot of work to shut all that off because they were ripping her off for so much money. And I remember asking her, this was so classic, my mom, like, Mom, why did you give to blah, blah, blah? She said, because they asked, darling.
Oh, she was so sweet. Oh, it's hard. I mean, I never know what to do at the checkout because you can't vet them right there. You assume the store has. I don't know. It's just uncomfortable. Katie in Connecticut says, Clark, two-part question. Do you recommend paying down credit card debt, $5,100, with extra money, $1,000, or beginning an investment habit by investing that $1,000 in mutual funds with a reputable company? Part two, does making three smaller payments of $100 each in a billing period against credit card debt help one's credit score more than one payment of the total sum of those three?
So if you're running a balance, you're paying a daily interest rate on credit cards. So let's forget the credit score for a minute. You're going to be able to pay that debt off quicker because you have more impact with those $300, paying it in three $100 payments throughout a month, rather than paying it all at one time in the 300 late in that cycle, because that $100, once you paid it, there's no more daily interest on that $100. That's why people who pay their credit card bills every 2 weeks and just keep paying enough to cover the minimum will end up out of debt in a fraction of the time of people who make one payment at the end of a month before the due date. And so that is really valuable. Will it ultimately help your credit score? It will do that too. But right now I'm really worried about the interest, because you asked me, taking the $1,000 a month, is $1,000 a month?
So it's $300 a month, but Katie has $1,000 extra money.
So the credit card debt carries a very high rate of interest. Average credit card in the country is now over 20% interest. You're not going to earn 20% in investments, but at the same time, it's great to start a habit. So I would say you open a Roth IRA if you don't have a Roth rather than a regular investment account, Katie, and you do 25% of the money each month in the Roth, so you're building that habit, and the other 75% goes towards the credit card debt, because the credit card debt impact is so great. But also building that habit of doing that Roth IRA consistently every single month, and then once you pay off the credit card debt, having a lot more money to put towards the Roth will pay off for you so well over time.
John in Virginia says, over the last couple of years, my kids have finished college and I've paid for three weddings. No credit card debt, student loans of $200,000. I took parent plus loans.
One train leaves from Cleveland, the other leaves from Chicago.
I'm sorry.
One's going at this speed, the other's, oh man.
You're good with numbers.
Yeah, I'm going to have to write notes.
Okay,
here.
Write notes.
Okay.
So John's got $200,000 in student loan debt. He says, I took parent plus loans. My kids have no debt, an outstanding mortgage of about $200,000, and a new truck I just bought at about $500 a month for 4 years. Made a big down payment. No other debts. I have a 6-month emergency fund. All sounds good, but it did come at a price, my retirement. I would like to retire in 6 years. My estimated income in 6 years is about $6,000 a month from pensions and Social Security. Sadly, I only started a Roth 3 years ago, but I've been maxing them out and will continue to do so. My 401k is less than $100,000 too. Currently, I have about $4,000 per month after expenses. I predict I will need a minimum of $7,000 to retire with the same lifestyle. My question is, should I concentrate on the student loans or adding more to some other type of retirement account?
Wow. Okay, so you need $1,000 additional dollars a month, $12,000 a year, to close the gap is fantastic. You have the pension and Social Security in order to fund life's needs. So that means you need, hope you're sitting, you need around $300,000 in investments for retirement in order to be able to fund that lifestyle. You've got less than $100,000 in the 401k. You're contributing, sounds like $16,000 a year into Roth IRAs. You may, don't kill me, you may need to work another year or 18 months beyond what you intended so you can continue to work on getting those student loans paid off. Those have got to be near zero 6-7 years from now.
Can I say something? Because yeah. I know people are going to write in about this. I know people are out there thinking, wait a second, you paid for 3 weddings. Your kids, you say, have no debt, but the $200,000 is debt for their school. Can they not contribute to that student loan debt when there is no scholarship for retirement, as you've always said?
Yeah. So I wasn't even going to go there because those are the choices he made.
Right, right.
So the answer, though, is right. I always say it's better for your kids to be on the hook for their college education than for you to have deprived yourself of saving for retirement. And I know the kids, they're going to say, gosh, it's just too bad dad didn't save more money the years. You know, they say, they think stuff like that. Yeah, so.
What'd your dad say?
One parent can take care of 10 kids, but 10 kids can't take care of one parent. So, John, I mean, the truth is, I hope your kids are listening. They say, Dad, let us take on that student loan debt. I mean, you do point something out right, but John looks at this. This is a situation.
Right.
He's got to live with it. So I would say for you not to be nervous in retirement, either you extend the time till you retire by that year, year and a half, which will give you more time to pay down on that student loan debt and build up money in the Roths, or you work part-time in retirement to close that gap that you're going to have each month and get those student loans paid off. The mortgage is being paid as agreed, but that $200,000 exists on student loan debt because of your big heart and what you did for your kids. So you're a great person who is carrying a big burden so that your kids would not have any debt at all when they finish their college educations.
Deborah in Ohio says, what are the best places for retired people to live or move to on a fixed budget where you get more for your money?
So Deborah, there are lots of lists about this that you can find online. And generally the best places are going to be in the Midwest where housing costs are usually a lot lower and access to good medical care in a lot of mid-size and larger Midwest markets, the availability of good medical care is there. So if you were to look around online, best places to retire, most affordable places to retire, you'll find place after place after place in the Midwest. Now, we're talking money here, because what do people in the Midwest do when they go to retire? They go to Florida, Arizona, South Texas, and they go to the Carolinas. I mean, that's, you know, the great migration and retirement of people from the Midwest. The Midwest has really lost population share of the country, meaning there's a lot cheaper housing in the Midwest, which is one of the big expenses you have in retirement. So if you zig while everybody else is zagging, you're in Ohio right now, you know what I'm talking about how much more affordable housing is in so much of Ohio than it is in so much of the rest of the country. So when you ask me, where's the best place to retire? If you want to go to warmer climes and follow everybody else from the Midwest, then you want to look at smaller towns in the South and the West and in Texas. That the big cities in the South and the West, and also Texas, have enormous housing costs, but the smaller towns don't. And that would be an alternative if the climate is really important to you. Healthcare might be more of an issue, but the warmer weather, if you want to follow that, you ask best place, it would be the smaller communities. And there is a movement that way in a lot of other places. Always rent, though. This is something I'm going to address in more detail at some point soon on the podcast. Always rent when you go to an unfamiliar part of the country at first to make sure it really fits you. Coming up ahead, I want to talk about medical providers who are there to help you, it appears, but are trying to destroy your wallet.
When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people, whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
We had a question recently from someone who was just totally flummoxed, confused, because they went to a doctor's office, and then when they got their bill, they got the bill for treating them, and their health plan took care of most of that. They had a small copay. And then they had a junk fee for something called a facility fee. And this is an ugly thing happening all over America, especially in any mid-size or large metro area. It is a plague. And you need to understand how you're being cheated by major medical centers, major hospitals in metro areas. Here's what happens. So you go to the doctor's office in a medical building or in a shopping center or whatever it is, or it could be a freestander, but usually it'll be a strip center or something like that. Go to the doctor's office, routine doctor's office, not an urgent care, not an, you know, an off-site emergency place, anything like that. And then you get hit with this giant bill. What's happened is the hospitals are gobbling up medical practices. So they've got feeders when somebody's sick that the answer to every question is you go to something with that hospital system. So the hospitals are going to the doctors and they're buying their practices. And it looks exactly the same. It'll be Dr. blah, blah, blah on the door. But then you get the bill, and the way the hospital, see, the hospital's playing this game where they're heads they win, tails they win. They're paying the doctor usually millions to buy the practice, and then they make back that money two ways. One, by getting the doctor to funnel patients into the high-cost hospital services, and making up the millions they paid the doctor by charging you this junk fee that could be $100 or $200 so often. And insurance is going to tell you, we're not paying that. So when you're hiring a new doctor or when you're making an appointment with one you already have, just remember to ask the question, are you adding a facility fee to bills now? If the answer is yes, you need to go find a new doctor. The hospitals are playing a dirty game with your and my wallet. There is no excuse for this. And it's a practice that should be banned. The wild thing is most of these hospital systems that are playing this dirty pool are nonprofits paying administrators $3 million, $5 million, $10 million a year and paying no tax, not contributing any tax dollars to the community. They're not really nonprofits. They are running profit engines tax-free. And then they're turning around and cheating the customers, the patients, with these junk fees. Know this is going on and know that you are the one who's left before you receive service, to ask the question, do you charge a facilities fee? And if they do charge a facility fee, then that's when you need to consider, is it worth it to you to pay an extra $100 or $200 out of pocket to visit that doctor? Or is it worth it more for you to go find another doctor who's not owned by one of the hospital systems? Something else you need to know that really became an issue, I'd say probably in 22 forward, is the health insurance industry is playing games with you when you go out of network. You know how your plan will have, if you have health coverage, there'll be in network and you, it's pretty predictable. You have this copay other than this thing I just told you about with the ripoff facility fee. But you'll see if you go in network, you've got the copay and you've got this deductible and all that. But then if you go out of network, the formula is completely different. Well, the insurance companies are using outside software providers to beat down the amount that they'll cover under your plan when you go out of network so that you end up having to pay a lot more out of pocket than what you think based on what the plan says. Know that the incentives are becoming so strong for you to stay in network and so brutal for you if you go out of network that the plan document saying this is the most you'll have to pay out of pocket and all that when you go out of network, it's really become somewhat a fiction. And you need to know that your medical care needs to be in network as much as absolutely possible. You know, the insurance industry is a topic we talk about a lot more than we used to. Homeowners, auto,
every part,
health.
Yes.
The insurance industry is really squeezing its customers, squeezing us.
There's more to come.
Yes, more to come.
Daniel in Georgia says, I have an interesting situation my wife and I have run into at our local hospital. We were both referred to their radiology department for a CT scan and an ultrasound. I used the hospital chain's price estimator tool and found they offered significant self-pay discounts. The CT scan with insurance was $300 and self-pay was $90. The ultrasound with insurance was over $900 and $530 with self-pay. Do you know why this is happening? Is insurance even worth it for smaller procedures? Also, I'd like to welcome your possibly youngest listener. My son is 15 weeks old and he listens with me on his way to daycare in the mornings, but it's just the thing to make him fall asleep for the entire ride. But I like to think he's getting great financial advice subconsciously.
But Daniel, the problem is the first words out of your 15-week-old's mouth are going to be, Roth IRA.
Freeze your credit.
Yeah.
never, not ever.
Not dad or mom. It's going to be, yeah, financial stuff. Okay, so you bring up a really interesting question. So yes, a lot of times if you'll pay cash up front and not have something processed through insurance, medical providers will offer you a much lower cost. And this is also true with the tests that you were referred to in the hospital, that if you go to a freestander independently owned, the prices might even be lower for cash pay. There are these freestanders popping up in shopping centers all over the country that are truly independently owned, and they say no insurance. Everything is a published price list, and normally it will be a lot cheaper than what the hospital is offering. The hospital is probably offering these discounts to compete against an independently owned freestander nearby that hospital. The downside of it, you're not having money contributed, expenses contributed towards your deductible on your health plan. But if you are not likely to fully use your insurance this year, then you're better off being a cash payer just as you are. You know, I talk about the prescriptions. I recently filled a prescription for a third the cost paying cash what it was through the pharmacy benefits manager I have.
Oh, somebody wrote in, by the way, saying you keep talking about how bad your prescription plan is, but you're giving that to your employees. And that's actually not true.
Not true. I get my, because of the weird Medicare laws, I am Medicare ineligible for esoteric reasons. And so I get my health coverage through a big company I also work for. My employees are on a different plan. And I don't know, is our prescription drug benefit something people are complaining about? Or are they happy with
it? I haven't heard it, but we could ask our HR person if she's heard anything. She would have told me, I would think.
So. Okay. So I'm on a really crummy prescription benefit plan. And that's okay. The employer doesn't have to give one at all. So better to have a crummy one, I guess, than not one at all.
Natalie in Ohio says, I just funded my Roth IRA for 2024 and now found out that I will be over the income limit this year. How do I remedy this situation? Can I pull out the money and avoid paying any penalties? I'm thinking I would then fund it with a via backdoor instead rather than a direct contribution to Roth.
So Natalie, you're already so far on the right path with what you're thinking. This is easy. So the big investment houses all are used to this problem, and they will reclassify your Roth IRA as a traditional non-deductible IRA, and it'll be not a big deal at all. You may owe a tiny amount of penalty for whatever your IRA has earned in this short period, but nothing meaningful or significant. If you are routinely going to be on the cusp of being eligible or ineligible for a Roth because you have the good problem of you're earning a lot of money now, remember with a Roth and traditional, you're able to fund it in the following year for the prior year up to when you file your return. So you want to wait each year to do funding of a Roth or whatever you're going to do, backdoor version. You want to wait till you have the look back of being able to look back and see what you earned in a year and then contribute rather than contribute current year. It always for you until your income either gets so high you're not even trying to figure it out or you're around that bubble where you may or may not be eligible. You want to wait till later to fund it each year.
Jerry in California says, you were talking about how car dealerships are now having too many cars that are past 55 days on the market. This was the very type of information that I used to get my new car. When my 11-year-old Leaf died, I was doing research and found a website called CarEdge.com.
Never heard of this.
The key bit of info they have versus others like KBB or Edmunds is down to a specific VIN. They can tell you how many days a dealer has had a given car.
No way.
I found the Mercedes electric vehicle I wanted has been sitting at the dealer for over 150 days. When I told the salesperson I knew how long they had it, the discounts started flying. Someone else without this info would not know if the car had been there for 150 days or if it just came off the truck and would not get as good of a deal. My next project is to get in and out to carry Coke Zero.
Yeah, you know, this, I don't understand why this hasn't been a revolution, that In-N-Out Burger will not carry Coke Zero. They carry lame Diet Coke. What's wrong with them? Okay, so I'm looking at this Car Edge right now. Never heard of it till just this second. If you're able to know for an individual VIN how long the dealer's having to floor it is where they're having to pay a daily interest charge for having that vehicle sit there, and you were able to drill down way beyond an individual model, and you were able to find that Mercedes EV that had been sitting for over 5 months. You had them over a barrel. They knew it. And the discounts, as you said, started flying. Love this. And so I'm going to check out Car Edge. If we need to add it to our car buying tools, we will do so because that is awesome. You were able to do so. And yes, the automakers have a variety of vehicles piling up on their lots, but nothing more right now than electrics that went from being the hardest of all vehicles to get to now the ones that nobody wants. And so you're able to find so much information out in the marketplace. I'm going to see how this works drilling down to an individual VIN. Thank you for suggesting that. It's absolutely great.
And just an initial look at the site, I looked at it. They'll help you negotiate and buy a car, but for free, you can just do a car search and it does show you right when you see it.
These are, how you're looking at used there. Ones right now. Mm-hmm. So you can see used and new availability, but I'm going to play with this tool and see how it works. And this is again, how we're all part of the team. And Jerry, you're now a member of Team Clark because here you are bringing additional information to the table that I didn't know. And Krista just got rid of her 11-year-old.
Yes, Nissan Leaf. It was a sad day.
So the Nissan Leafs, those first generation Leafs, were not the greatest cars in the world, but you both got 11 years out of them. And they were the first attempt to have electric vehicles in the marketplace. Not a very good attempt, but a first attempt. And that led to everything going on now. So I hope you enjoy your new Mercedes electric. And I'm sure you're enjoying the great, great deal you got. And I don't know what to say about In-N-Out. We got to fix that. I'm going to be having my 3x3 really soon. I'm going to break my heart healthy diet to have a 3x3 at In-N-Out. If you don't know what 3x3 is, go read the secret menus.
Please don't write in about Clark's diet. We hear you. You've been heard.
So what did I have for dinner last night? Mediterranean diet.
Nice.
Had grilled fish, vegetables.
Great.
Eating broccoli all the time. Ugh.
That's fantastic.
Fantastic for what?
For your health and well-being.
Oh, this heart healthy thing. It's tough stuff. But I'm here.
Yeah.
It's been more than four months.
That's great.
Since I got my new Sapien X4 experimental heart valve.
And healthcare is expensive, so you want to keep yourself healthy, right?
Well, I want to keep myself healthy because I want to be alive, because it didn't look like I was going to be, and I'm still here kicking. And I'm averaging 9 miles a day walking. My feet are sore from it. Ask me about my cheap shoes. I know I need to buy better shoes. Anyway, that's all for us today. Remember what we're about. You learn ways to save more, spend less, and avoid getting ripped off.